Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Elvin Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Mottram. Joining me now to talk about the Redskins' 34-17 home loss to the New York Jets. It's the man who scored as many touchdowns as the Washington Redskins over a recent 16-quarter stretch, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
Good, man. They went four games without a touchdown, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I understood what you were saying. I was somewhat disappointed to see the streak end. I'm not going to lie. I know that will, in the eyes of some, make me a hater or something like that. But I just, you know, it was the only thing they had going for them. Sometimes if you're good at something, even if it's something bad, I just kind of want you to keep doing it.
It was the longest stretch an NFL team has gone without a touchdown since, I think, 2000?
Yeah, the Baltimore Ravens that would go on to win the Super Bowl.
Won the Super Bowl that year. that was a Super Bowl Ravens team.
Yeah, that was a Trent Dilfer team. Yeah. I was covering that for some, I don't even remember, some fly by night web based publication that probably closed, you know, immediately following that season. But as a result, I watched.
And you're getting a 6-figure salary.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a different time.
I mean, it depends on where you put the decimal point, but it was definitely 6 figures or something.
Sure.
So I watched a lot of that Ravens team. And I remember, you know, it's funny because when people were talking about this week, they were like, oh, you know, I don't think it's going to work out as great for this team as it did for that team. And it's not. This team is terrible and that team wasn't. But I will say, I remember at the time, people did not take the Ravens seriously because their offense was so bad, even though the defense was historically good. The Redskins don't have that problem because nothing is historically good about this team.
I mean, they gave up 34 points to the Jets.
Yes. And after Daniel Jones put up 300 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Jets defense, they didn't.
So I had a neighbor, you know, encounter, you know, on the streets of Wilmington, North Carolina. And he was like, hey, did you watch the Skins game today? And I was like, no, we were watching Deshaun versus Lamar. And he goes, I was just kidding. Like, he knows that I'm a diehard Skins fan, and he was like, oh, you would never watch this team.
Well, I have a friend, and I believe occasional listener to the pod, who's a big Redskins fan, and I ran into him at the grocery store Sunday morning, and he was wearing a throwback vintage sort of faux faded Redskins hoodie. But looking at him in it, as I noticed him, I realized they got to be careful with the vintage year, because what it looks like is that you bought it when the team was good and you're still just wearing it, but now it's all ratty and has holes in it. Like, it doesn't look cool vintage. It looks like run down and destroyed, much like this team.
So it looks more like, why would you buy merch at any point over the last 30 years vintage?
Exactly. But it looks like you're smart. Like, you were smart enough not to do it, but you still kept your old sweatshirt. And, you know, shout out to Jeremy, a friend and occasional listener, who, it was a lovely sweatshirt. I don't mean to run down your sweatshirt.
No, Jeremy looked great.
Yeah. Handsome, handsome man.
I know the box score. That's pretty much all I know. And I know that there was a moment in the game, though I don't know the game situation, where Haskins entered the offensive lineman group on the sideline and kind of was doing something either imploring them to do better or asking them what he could do better. I'm not really sure what was happening there, but it seemed notable. I got alerts on my phone about it.
Yeah, it's something that really, if the season had turned around at that point, would have been a natural for a t-shirt, but the season did not turn around at that point. I think from what I saw of that moment, I think that, you know, there was that story that came out earlier this week, or maybe it was last week, where he came into Coach Callahan's office after the loss in Minnesota and said, Coach, what can I do to get better? And that was the moment that Callahan knew that he could trust Dwayne Haskins. And I think the response to that story was so favorable that he internalized, all right, when I say things to someone, what I need to say is, what can I do to get better? So in that crucial moment in the game, that's what he thought of. That's where he went to. And that's what he did.
This reminds me of anytime, and it really doesn't happen anymore because I think we're past that now. But anytime Trump didn't he would do something, but it didn't blow up in his face. It was like that was the moment he became presidential.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting heavy, heavy vibes like that with that's the moment when Haskins became the real quarterback.
Yes. Now, there's an argument to be made that losing and playing badly is, in fact, the moment when Haskins became a true Washington Redskin.
So I don't know. Actually, let me go back to the Haskins offensive line moment. I know he got sacked 6 times. I don't know. Was the line just playing? Was the line play atrocious? Like what was happening there that, you know, that moment occurred and then it kind of became a thing that blew up a little bit.
I was not close mm-hmm. enough to really follow the nuances of the game. Mm-hmm. I also am not good at determining when the line has let down the quarterback and when the quarterback has let down the line, unless it's exceptionally obvious. It looks to me like nobody on this team is ready. I think it was John Keim of ESPN who mm-hmm. was saying that basically, like, Haskins isn't good enough to lift a bad team yet, mm-hmm. and the team isn't good enough to sort of support Haskins and build a structure around him. Mm-hmm. So the net result is just that everybody is performing as badly as they possibly can.
But this is the thing, like, at this point, I don't know who's, like, you know, fervently rooting or believing that Haskins is going to be the franchise quarterback. But how could you know? He's the third quarterback who's played, and they've all sucked.
Yeah, I mean, the one argument to make is that if he was truly transcendent, he'd be able to come that. I don't think that's the case, personally. Yeah. I don't know.
But you would have to be truly transcendent, like upon arrival, you have to transcend the transcendence. You know what I mean? Like Russell Wilson is in like year 7 or 8, and he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and you could see him, you know, lifting a bad offense up to medium or even good. But as a rookie with no experience, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just basically saying, like, this is the worst situation. I don't know how you could evaluate the quarterback within it.
I don't either. I think that in some ways, RG3's rookie year, he really elevated the team and did everything he could. And it was with the coaching staff. You know, the coaching staff crafted an offense
right.
that was well-suited to his skill set.
And he had very specific skills that are, like, Haskins is a different type of quarterback.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Haskins mm-hmm. has what does Haskins have? What is our optimistic view of Haskins?
I mean, isn't he supposed to be like a strong-armed passer? Like a strong-armed, accurate passer? Or is that not right? I don't know. I knew he threw 50 touchdowns at Ohio State last year.
Strong-armed, I think, is in the thing. I think I keep hearing that, well, we knew there were questions about his accuracy every time he mm-hmm. misses badly with a pass, which he has done a lot mm-hmm. This year. I don't know. Did you read Boswell's column coming off the game?
It was very good.
It was very good. Do you want to summarize it?
It was just about how the Redskins have lost DC.
Yes.
Like, and really, really, really lost them this time.
Well, my argument is that it's a self-fulfilling column because, you know, the old, like, well, if we've lost Cronkite, mm-hmm. then we've lost Middle America. Mm-hmm. It's that. If you've lost Boswell this thoroughly, then you've lost everything. Because Boswell, you know, he's a good he's a good journalist. I think he would hate to hear himself described in this fashion, but like he grew up with the Redskins. He bleeds the Redskins. He loves them. He has the same like family associations with them that we all do. And for him to say like, this is it, they are mm-hmm. meaningless and done is a big moment.
Yeah. Has he somehow not said that before?
I don't think so. That
incredible
was
restraint. Incredible restraint yeah. from Boswell.
I mean, it seems like there have been a lot of rocks bottom over the past decade or so.
Good plural on the rocks part of that. I would have gone bottoms.
Yeah, I don't know if it was correct, but I liked the way it flowed. Mm-hmm. I had a thought. Can I ask a random hypothetical?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if we're at the random hypotheticals portion of this podcast or not yet. You know, there was that thing that came out that Jeff Bezos was looking to buy into the NFL sure. and sort of everybody went crazy like, hey, hopefully, you know, he'll somehow convince Dan to sell him the team.
Right. Because there was some DC stuff in there. Like he was like taking up residence in DC or something. I can't remember exactly what.
Right. And I think let me just say as a side note that I think we would all be totally OK with the owner of The Washington Post also owning the football team. I'm sure that would never get weird. in any way.
So far down the list of my concerns in this scenario, but okay.
True. But okay, let's set that aside for a moment. And let's accept for the moment my belief that Dan Snyder will never, ever, ever sell the team under any circumstances other than when it is impossible not to, okay? Here is my hypothetical. What if the NFL came to Bezos and said, look, we can't force Snyder to sell the team. Well, there's not much we can do, but what we can do is this. We will create an AFC Washington franchise for you to run. And it would come in, it would basically be the Jets to the, you know, Redskins, Giants. And we go from there, and they kick off next year. Do you become a fan of that team from the jump? Do you wait and see? How do you react to that situation?
I think we have a very similar comparison to make, which is when the Nationals came to town. And me and, I don't know, I wouldn't say millions, but perhaps hundreds of thousands of others were lifelong Orioles fans. The way that I handled that was I was now an Orioles and a Nationals fan. And eventually, I think through just like being more connected to DC than Baltimore and the Nationals having more success, I became more of a Nationals fan. But I still like support the O's. Now, I don't know if that's exactly how this scenario would play out, but I could see that being how I'd handle it. I'd be a fan of the new team. I'd still be a fan of the old. I wouldn't just like cut out. Although people did do that with the O's. My dad in particular hated Angelos, just like a lot of people hate Snyder. And he just cut the O's out effective immediately. So I don't know. Just my thoughts.
I think a lot of people would do that. I really do. I think there are a lot of people who would just say, look, this is my out. I need an out and I will take this one.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I would love it because then one of us could follow one team and one of us could follow the other. And then that would be like the framework of the podcast.
I would love it, of course, because right now it just feels so like hopeless and just dreary to be a football fan.
It does feel abjectly hopeless. And I feel like our most common topic of conversation when we talk about football, either on or off the podcast over the last like decade is, well, what would give you hope? What could they do next year that would make things okay? Yeah. And what do you have an answer this time around? I don't.
I mean, it always comes back to Snyder selling the scene. This is a creative alternative to that.
I don't, but Snyder's not going to sell the team and Bezos is probably not going to get an AFC franchise. I mean, maybe what if the Chargers moved here, the Washington Chargers?
Well, did you see the Chargers owner's quote about moving to London?
Yes.
Like his quote was basically like, we're not fucking leaving.
Yes. Which I'm sure everybody will put on t-shirts when they start their 2022 season in London.
Yeah, we almost did put that one on a t-shirt. It was delightful. You all right?
Yeah, I tried to get the mic away from my ear. Little behind inside baseball, there's no cough button on this program.
Okay, well, you know, that's fine. This is real. The thing that delighted me about the Bezos story was like, why this guy is like 10 times wealthier than the second wealthiest owner in the league, I think. It's a real stat. So of course he would buy the least desirable franchise in the entire league. why would anyone think that Bezos would be interested in the Redskins to begin with?
I don't know. I mean, I think the idea is that he would be basically consolidating an entire fiefdom in the greater DC metropolitan area, where he would have an Amazon headquarters, the Washington Post, and his football team. And basically at that point, he might as well, you know, raise a standing army or perhaps just a militia. And eventually it would become its own nation state.
I want to come back to one thing from the Boswell column. There's a brief aside just in the middle of this pretty big picture column about the Skins losing the city. That was that Monte Nicholson played yesterday, less than 2 days after dropping off a dead 21-year-old woman at the emergency room at 2:30 a.m. in Loudoun County. Did I have the facts on that right? I think I did.
I think so. I wasn't 100% sure if she was dead on arrival or if she died at the hospital, but okay. Yes,
that's the fuzzy part. Everything else about that,
yes,
that paragraph was true.
Yes. Oh, that's it. That's just an observation that is the thing that happened.
Like, what is going on? What is this story? Like, I don't need to make light of it. I'm just puzzled by like what is going on in Monte Nicholson's personal life where that happened, but also like he's just business as usual.
Yeah, I find the whole thing super weird. I sort of, in my head, chalked it up to like, well, the wealthy are not like you and me, and you just never know. But yeah, I don't know.
He's so wealthy, he could just do, he could, you know, just get away with murder.
Well, I don't think anybody's accusing him of having murdered her.
I'm just saying, like, you're saying he's so wealthy. Valter Nicholson probably makes like $300,000.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what your salary is, buddy, but to me, that is
that's like the median income in Northern Virginia, I think.
Generational wealth to me, man. And also, speaking of bad things happening to current and former members of the Redskins defensive backfield, did you see the whole thing with Sua Cravens last night?
No, but given that segue, I am intrigued.
So I don't know the details. I only caught it as it sort of scrolled by, but late Sunday night, there was a tweet from Will Compton, something to the effect of, yo, you know, if anybody has, and then it was Sua Cravens's Twitter handle, his phone number, call or text him. This is no joke, man. So I went to look through, and he had either Instagrammed or TikToked something that was a sort of like, if this is the end, goodbye, cruel world, and then had done something that was like, goodbye, and then had switched his account to private and changed his name to RIP. It appears, based on what I saw this morning, that he was located and everything was okay. But it was just like,
good Lord.
Yeah, at some point you're like, God, it's like the drummer from Spinal Tap back there in the Redskins defensive backfield. Just everything goes wrong all the time. And in a giant way, not just a minor, like Josh Norman got bad at football way, but in a like a life ruining way.
Going back to Sean Taylor.
Yeah.
And so what is Sua Cravens doing now? Is he like on the Jets or something? Like, I have no idea.
I thought he got cut from somebody this year. I know he got cut from the Broncos last year. I definitely thought I saw, I can't vouch for this all, but I thought I saw him get released in like a small spatter of, you know, gloating, like, see, he wasn't that good after all kind of tweets at some point, but maybe I'm making all of that up.
Well, so in recent weeks, when we had like the kind of micro version of the what would make you care conversation, it was like, well, Haskins starting, that would be the thing. And now he's starting and I don't care.
Yeah.
And then it was like also like, oh, well, maybe if Darius Geis was back, and now Geis is back and I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know what would make me care about the rest of this. I don't even know who they're playing next week.
I don't think anything can make me care too much about the rest of this season. I will say that in the highlights I saw in the bits that I watched and having it on in the background, like I liked when I saw Darius Geis do good things. Terry McLaurin had like a crazy catch. I liked the idea that there could be a core three skill players there, but I hate Callahan's offense so much. I find Callahan so annoying. And he is such an interim coach that I just see no point in getting invested to anything that happens now.
He is such an interim coach, but it's weird because he's getting like a full season. You know, it's like, I guess this is what 1-15 feels like.
I was thinking today about how the only person who truly benefited from Jay Gruden's firing was Jay Gruden, which is kind of a weird thing to realize. Like, that guy's got to be so happy.
Well, he's got to be so happy. The other thing I just want to mention that happened this weekend that's not good for the Redskins or anyone is Tua.
Yep.
Breaking his hip. So who knows if we're going to be in the market for a quarterback at the top of the draft, but we're going to be at the top of the draft, and we very well might be in the market for a quarterback. So Tua was, I don't know, is he like number two, top three? On mock drafts coming into the weekend, that was my perception.
Yeah.
And now who knows? I mean, I think that could be a career altering injury. So you're looking really at Joe Burrow, who's number one overall to the Bengals. That's kind of like the current thinking.
Right. Cause he's an Ohio guy also, right?
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's having a real breakout year and flying up the board. Number two is Hebert. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Oh, I have no idea.
Should we go with Hebert?
Sure. If he goes to New Orleans, then he'll be an Hebert.
And he seems to be kind of all over the board in the mocks, like a little lower and maybe even dipping into the teens. So now when you remove Tua from that top mix, it's really like there's one obvious guy and one guy who might be a reach. And I don't know. It's not that it really matters to be thinking that far out.
But, well,
there's just one less asset out there.
Yes, which has, there is a paradoxical way in which that could be more valuable, because what that can do, and obviously we all hope Tua has a full recovery. I would just like to see him play in the NFL. He was, you know, fun to watch. So just from a purely selfish perspective and a human perspective, hopefully he gets better. He gets into the top half of the draft and, you know, great. But if he doesn't, if he's out of there, it means that the first pick overall becomes even more valuable. So yeah. If you fall into that pick, and I think the Redskins could be, I don't think anybody would give them shit if they traded out of the first overall spot to get multiple other first rounders rather than taking the top quarterback on the board.
My question is, like, why would the Bengals ever lose and ever win a game at this point? Like, why would they ever win a game? They're lined up for the number one pick. The number one overall on everybody's board right now, it seems, is Burrow, and he happens to play a position they need, that's the most valuable position, and he happens to be an Ohio guy. It's like the perfect scenario. They would fuck it up. It'd be a very Bengals thing to do, to fuck it up and lose a game and let the Redskins slide in.
Well, two reasons. One is, as you say, they are the Bengals. And the other reason is maybe they're not as sold on Burrow as everybody else is. I mean, he is doing one of my least favorite things. If we had been looking at the player, is the meteoric one-year rise, which actually is what Dwayne Haskins did. But I hate that. I really like, I never trust it. You never know. Was it something with the offensive coordinator or something, you know, really specific? So maybe they feel the same way and maybe they don't care as much.
Well, I'm kind of drinking the drink with everybody else on him, because it's like, it's just, I think LSU being undefeated and beating Bama and having him at quarterback, like, it's all a very fun, and Orgeron at coach, it's very easy to root for. It's very fun to kind of get on that wagon. So who knows about NFL prospects? I do want to go back to Tua, though. I happened to be watching the game when he got hurt, and it was one of the more, like, unsettling football injury moments. It was sad in a way that, like, RG3 on the field in Seattle was sad, because, you know, Tua probably should have been out of the game at that point. He got tackled. It wasn't even like a real violent collision, but he got driven into the ground violently by two guys that were chasing him. And when he got up, or tried to get up, it was clear that there's something wrong with his leg or hip or whatever, something major, but also his face had been driven into the ground so hard that he was, like, bleeding profusely from his nose, and maybe had a broken nose too. So these things are happening simultaneously, and the staff's out there. They're just trying to get him to, like, they got, like, a towel on his face. They're just trying to get him to a point where they could even, like, deal with getting him onto the cart.
Right.
Because of the, like, multiple injuries that were occurring, and then he's showing his parents in the stands. Man, it was a tough watch, and I feel so bad for him, because it's about as bad an injury as you could have.
Yeah, I mean, it's for people of our age, the first thing you think of is definitely Bo Jackson. I mean, I think it's what everybody thinks of, but I remember it. I mean, I remember Bo Jackson being one of the coolest, most fun to watch football players on the planet, and then, like,
oh my god. Yeah.
Suddenly he has, and we were kids. So to me, it was like, suddenly he has this injury and that was it. He was gone. That was it.
That was so weird too, because it was pre-internet, and it was like, why is he out forever?
Exactly.
It's like, what? It's a congenital hip condition or something. I don't even know what these words mean. I still don't.
Yeah. Very confusing. Also, something you just said made me think, we've all always kind of said, you know, they should have gotten RG3 out of there. He shouldn't have been on the field when he suffered the final injury. And man, if you look at the history of the NFL since, that seems even more true, because, like, I may really not enjoy Kirk Cousins or the Kirk Cousins experience, but you had a second full-time starter quality, you know, future $30 million a year quarterback on the bench.
Who had just recently played and won, like, down the stretch.
Yep, in a crucial game, though. It was the Browns game, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it is even more inexcusable in hindsight than it was at the time. And it was pretty inexcusable at the time.
I do like that RG3 is, like, part of this Ravens story.
Yes.
You know, like, they were running the Heisman package with him getting an option out of the backfield. And, you know, because the Ravens are just, like, sky high right now. So for him to be, whatever, like, the backup quarterback and kind of somehow getting involved in fun ways, like, it's just, I think a RG3, like, resurgence is wildly unlikely, but this is a nice outcome.
Yeah, I like the idea of him as sort of the aging role player who missed his shot due to circumstances beyond his control, but who gets to, you know, be part of a you know, title run. And it's nice that the offense being run is sort of like the descendant of the offense that he was running in 2012 in DC, right. You know? I also, right. I think, I feel like the Ravens are somehow the Ravens are to the 2000s and 2010s, what the Redskins were to like 90s, in that, you know, the Redskins were always second fiddle to the Niners. When people talk about, you know, those years, it was Bill Walsh, it was Joe Montana, it was the 49ers. And then the Redskins kind of never had, they just rebuilt themselves on the fly every time. And so they never had that character that the national consciousness could cling to, aside from maybe Joe Gibbs. I feel like the Ravens are the same thing. Like, they've just been quietly good for 15 years in a bunch of different ways with a bunch of different quarterbacks of a bunch of different styles. And the Patriots overshadow them completely, but like, my God, it must be fun to be a Ravens fan.
I've never rooted for the Ravens before now. I don't think I can't recall ever. I always kind of resented them because they were always the AFC game locally in DC, and they were right. Never fun to watch.
Right.
And now they could not be more fun.
Yeah, no, they're the most fun team. I rooted for them briefly during that 2000 run because, as I said, I was covering them, and you sort of get attached to a team when you have to watch them in detail every week.
I feel like you just exposed the entire media.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I had just moved to Baltimore and was, as I've said so many times, they were lighting the city up purple every night. The defense was historic. The whole city had this us against them against us vibe because, you know, everybody hated the Ravens because they were, you know, a bunch of like murderers and criminals. I found that intensely likable at the time.
First, I thought when you said lighting the city up purple, I thought this was like some sort of slang for like a drug that I don't know about yet.
Yeah, no, they literally swapped out purple light bulbs for all the buildings in Baltimore. And
that's not as fun.
No, it's not as fun. But it was the first time I had ever seen that, and was certainly the first time I had ever lived in a city that was doing that. So it was hard not to get a little attached to them at the time.
The Redskins' next game is a home affair. Lucky for them. Lucky for everyone.
They haven't won it at FedEx Field since October of last year, correct?
I believe you. I mean, once Alex Smith broke his leg, I feel like they haven't won, period. I think the record is like 2-13 or something since then.
Anyway, all right, so who is this game against?
It's okay, Detroit's coming to town. Guess the spread.
Do we know if Stafford is back?
I don't, personally.
I think Stafford is still out.
Okay, let's just assume that his return is in doubt.
Okay, so if Stafford's still out, let's see, the Redskins get 3 points for being at home. So Lions, the Jeff Driscoll-led Lions by 4?
Good guess, 3. Okay. Yeah, Lions. Yeah, Lions favored by 3.
Yeah.
The Lions with their backup quarterback. The Lions, who I think are like 5-6 or something like that, with the backup quarterback, are favored.
Yeah, and it's crucial to note that he's not like, you know, it's not like the Bengals who are starting a draft pick to see what he's got or somebody that might be the future. This is like Jeff Driscoll. It's like
a sixth rounder, yeah, something like that.
It's like the poor man's Josh McCown. So that's cool. That's going to be fun to watch next week.
I don't even know how to spell Jeff Driscoll. There's two Jeff Driscolls out there. There's like one with a K-E-L at the end and one with the C-O-L.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong one. So I could be wrong in literally everything I just said.
Okay, so there's been two Jeff Driscolls, actually, that have played in the NFL at quarterback, which is fascinating. But this one is the Driscoll. And yeah. Anyway, he's going to be playing quarterback against the Redskins.
Am I totally wrong? Does he have journeyman stints in other places, or is this it?
Okay, this is insane. Okay, this is kind of blowing my mind. I think I had the wrong Driscoll. Of the 49ers 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he played with the Bengals. He got 5 starts last year.
Yeah. Okay, cool. This is the guy that I thought of. So that makes me feel bad.
Yeah. So anyways, he's looked upon more favorably than our first round quarterback.
Well, I mean, they have a head coach who you just have to respect because he's better than our head coach. I'm vamping because I'm literally blanking on who that coach is. But I assume he's better than our guy.
The Lions, by the way, I had them wrong. They're 3-6-1. So they're favored. They've lost three in a row. They've lost 6 out of 7. And they have Jeff Driskel at quarterback, and they're favored in this game.
I think Kenny Golladay is going to win some fantasy regular seasons next week. That's what I think.
We've talked enough about the Redskins. I have one more question for you that could lead into a pop culture segment of that.
Sure.
It could be very fun or very brief. Have you seen The Mandalorian?
I have seen The Mandalorian. Have you seen The Mandalorian?
In a shocking twist, I watched episode 1 of The Mandalorian.
I'm genuinely surprised by this turn of events. I don't think of you as a Star Wars guy. Are you a Star Wars guy at all?
I was a Star Wars kid. And, I mean, after the first 3 films, I'd say I have been not a total zero on Star Wars, but I have not watched all the movies. I don't know the universe. I don't follow it. I wasn't even aware that The Mandalorian was a thing until last week. But I really enjoyed episode 1. And if you're listening, it's going to get spoilery. So
yeah, we're gonna spoil. There's a crucial moment at the end of episode 1, and we're gonna have to talk about it. So,
yeah.
So wait, what prompted you to watch it if you haven't watched all the Star Wars movies?
I was just talking to like a Star Wars loving friend who was like so geeked about The Mandalorian and was like, "Why don't you just give it a shot? It's the Star Wars TV show. Like you're gonna like it. It's 40 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever each episode is, and it's like picks up where the first 3 films left off, like." You're going to at least like it. So I gave it a shot and he was right.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I think that Space Werner Herzog is one of my favorite characters in Star Wars in the last, I don't know, 20 years.
I was getting heavy Obi-Wan Kenobi vibes off of him or like Alec Guinness, like from the early ones, you know, it was very just like vibe wise. It was very reminiscent.
I can see that. Have you been following any of his like interviews in support of the show?
No, and here's the other thing is I don't know anything coming into it, so I didn't know that like Werner Herzog was in it. Even while I'm watching it, I didn't know that like Nick Nolte was in it or even Horatio Sands. I was like, this guy seems familiar, but I don't know who it is.
Horatio Sands was the only one of them that annoyed me. I was actually worried about the first few minutes of the show with that Horatio Sands character because it just wasn't hitting the vibe I was looking for.
It was very Jar Jar.
Yes.
A little jarring.
Yes. And they were like, it was almost like they were like, well, Jar Jar had that funny accent that people thought was racist, so we can't do that. So we're just going to have you speak completely normally, even though you are some sort of weird blue fish alien.
Yeah.
Weird decision. Didn't like it. But everything got better from there. What was it like when Werner Herzog shows up when you didn't know that was coming? How did that play?
I was just confused by it all because I don't really know like what timeline I'm on either. So there's like stormtroopers, but they're like, I don't know, like gangsters or something. Like I didn't quite understand like where I was in the timeline of things. I was like confused by Werner Herzog. I was confused by everything. I thought honestly that the Mandalorian dude was Boba Fett. And then I was reminded by like a review that I read after like a recap that Boba Fett died. In the other,
yeah,
and I was like, okay, I don't remember that from when I was 6.
Yeah, so it's further complicated by the fact that Boba Fett, and this is going deep nerd level here, but unless they've changed it in their many revisions to what is and is not canon, Boba Fett himself was not a Mandalorian. He just wore Mandalorian armor. So we know nothing, or at least I know nothing, about the actual culture of the Mandalorians. I think I got covered in one of those cartoons that they did, Rebels or... Clone Wars, but I didn't watch those, so I don't know anything.
I don't know. I'm just enjoying it as like a total, like person who doesn't follow or know or understand Star. Like when Carl Weathers shows up at the beginning,
yes,
I honestly was like Lando Calrissian, and then I was like, no, not that's a different actor from that period who played Lando. Yes, but I hadn't seen like Billy D. Williams or Carl Weathers in like 30 years. So, you know, like who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. No, it's interesting because when you put it this way, it really makes sense. Like it's a 40-minute show that is a really, really high budget, well executed, like dumb pulpy space fantasy Western thing. And of course that final scene, of Baby Yoda, my wife and my son both literally gasped out loud at the reveal of Baby Yoda, okay, or whatever so it is.
Shout out to the internet for like being not spoiling that for me. That Baby Yoda reveal was online for 5 days. I was very online that entire period and had no idea that Yoda or a Baby Yoda was involved in any way.
Yeah, the internet, they pulled the same thing. What was the last one they did where everybody sort of then sat? Oh, it was some movie where everybody kind of sat around and congratulated themselves, right, for not having blown.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, maybe?
Maybe. It may even been before that. It may have been one of the previous. Maybe it was Endgame. Maybe it was the end, not Endgame, Infinity War. Maybe it was that one. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I have questions about Baby Yoda, by the way.
Please, let's see what I can do for you on the topic of Baby Yoda.
Is that Yoda?
I don't know. No. So the funny thing is nobody knows yet. I have seen episode 2, which it doesn't sound like you have.
No.
There are no real answers in episode 2. So I'm not spoiling anything there.
Yoda's a very, 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 very old man.
Yoda's dead at this point.
Oh, Yoda's dead.
Yeah. Yoda dies in Return of the Jedi.
Okay. So I totally forget that.
Yeah, no, Yoda died in Return of the Jedi. So this is either a reincarnated Yoda or a cloned Yoda or another young member of Yoda's species.
Is it son or daughter of Yoda?
It could be a son or daughter of Yoda.
So there everything's open at this point, other than like it's not like it's probably not Yoda unless it's a Yoda reincarnate.
Yes, it could be a reincarnation. Yeah, it's the key like meta narrative of this is that Yoda's species and origins were one of the things that Lucas was never let anybody touch. Even before he sold to Disney, when they would license out books and stories and stuff, nobody was ever allowed to reveal Yoda's species or really tell anything about Yoda. So the fact that this is kind of a big deal in the meta narrative of Star Wars.
That's amazing. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this is the sort of thing I never spent a second in my life thinking about. But yes. I know that it's like a you know, the magnitude of that reveal could not have been bigger.
Yes. And it didn't hurt that it's also just adorable, just most adorable. My wife spent an extended period of time on Saturday night drinking a glass of wine and trying to explain to me why Baby Yoda is the person we all need in the world right now. Real big success.
Also, for the movie, right on the heels of like just a badass shootout with the clone bounty hunter. Like, yeah. I really enjoyed that. You know, I'm not like a big whatever action guy or enthusiast, but that was super fun, and I felt like I was watching like a 2019 Star Wars version of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Or something.
Yes, and they were definitely there were shots that were clearly meant to remind you of Butch and Sundance, which I love that movie. Oh, and also just real quick.
And it was so funny. Like the clone was actually funny with like the self-destruction.
Self-destructing. That was funny. The two things about Werner Herzog. One is the character, allegedly, in case you didn't see it in something you read, nobody knows, but the suspicion is that he is essentially the equivalent of like the Nazis that fled to South America and is basically sort of trying to run holding his empire stuff.
Yeah. Right. So holding out for the empire, still riding for it. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I got the sense that, like, without knowing anything about it, that was a character of major importance. But I really didn't understand it beyond what you just said.
Yeah, no, that's all we know so far. And then the interviews have been hilarious because, like, the first round of interviews was essentially him being like, "Yes, I chose to be in it, although I've never seen a Star Wars movie, nor have I ever seen a film that Jon Favreau has made. But I was fascinated to be in it." But then, like, the quotes that have come out since then, and especially since the Baby Yoda reveal, are all like, Werner Herzog talking about how like the puppet is soulful and beautiful and it was a treasure to work with this puppet, and that they were doing things like they would shoot with the puppet Baby Yoda, and then they would cover and have the person just hold sort of a green blob that they could green screen a digital Yoda onto if they needed to. And he's like, "Well, why are we doing it twice?" And they explain to him what I've just explained, and he's like, "You all are cowards. You should trust your skills and trust your art." Like, it's just been reading him talking about Star Wars has just been the most amazing thing. Highly recommend looking those up.
It's so funny because, like, I come into this knowing nothing about Star Wars. Now I feel like one of those memes where I'm like, watches Mandalorian once and is like consuming all content.
It's so the further meta narrative to this is Disney Plus, huh?
Okay, so Disney Plus, by the way, I would have watched episode 2, but I couldn't because my stream just kept crapping out. And I don't know if this is a I haven't like searched to see if this is a common problem that Disney Plus users are having or if it's specific to me, but I like on episode 1 I had to like restart it 3 times, and episode 2 I couldn't even really get it to start to begin with.
Huh. No, I haven't heard much about that. What
of course this was on like a Sunday night, I don't know, like very prime like streaming time, and I don't know. I mean, whatever.
What device 10 are you
billion
using?
People 10 billion people just started using the service for the first time. I'm just streaming off my MacBook.
Okay.
So that never happens with like every other streaming service.
Yeah, no, the only reason I asked is because I did hear they were having some problems with Fire Sticks. So well, I don't
know. Thank you, IT support guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for, man. If I can offer the biggest entertainment multinational conglomerate a little bit of free tech support, I'm gonna do it, you know. Yeah.
Well, honestly, we wouldn't even have had Disney Plus if it didn't come free with like something else that we already have. I don't
the
even
Verizon know Verizon phone.
Verizon, like, yes. Yeah. Yes. So we're Verizon Unlimited, so we get like free Disney Plus. This whole conversation would not have happened without that perk.
Yeah, no, we were gonna be signed up for it no matter what. And my son has watched some of the most random crap, and not the old crap that we had that's inexplicably on there. He's finding like Pixar shorts and other new content they're creating, and
that's cool.
I don't know, it's weird. He's having a delightful time of it.
We watched Lady and the Tramp as a family, the new one.
How was it? I haven't watched that one yet.
How was it? Really?
Yes.
It's cute. It's cute. Well, man.
I mean, so my memory of the cartoon Lady of the Tramp is that it's boring and terrible.
This is live action, so you've got like talking dogs. So this is there. That's pretty much it. It's like talking dogs and two of them fall in love.
Do they recreate the spaghetti scene?
It's like little kid Disney stuff.
Do they recreate the spaghetti scene?
Yeah, pretty well.
Okay, good.
Pretty good job.
Well, then I'll check that out. Did you, changing off the Disney Plus topic, did you wind up ever trying Watchmen?
No. Okay. No, because that's like the one streaming thing I don't have right now is HBO. Maybe I should hit you up.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll send you a password or just give you very vivid descriptions of each episode.
It seems like something I should be watching and hopefully we'll watch at some point.
I think
everybody seems to be pretty happy with it.
I was talking to a friend who did not read the comics and knew very little about the property, who was loving it, which I find inexplicable because I don't know how anyone can possibly be making heads or tails of it if they haven't read the comic book. But, oh my God, it is so good. It is so well executed, and I'm just beyond impressed with it.
I felt liberated watching Mandalorian in that way versus, like, when I watched, I don't know, like, the last season of Game of Thrones, where, like, I felt the weight of like needing or like I should know all of this stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I should know all of this stuff to maximize the experience. Now, since I don't know any of the stuff, it's just like pure popcorn.
Yeah, and Mandalorian works well like that. I apparently Watchmen does too, so I don't know if it's one of those weird things where like if you bring knowledge to it, you see areas where it's like relevant, but if you don't have that knowledge, those things just sort of skid by and it's just an enjoyable mystery in the show. But it does not even attempt the same like seeker sensitive tone that Mandalorian has. It's, you know,
I have one more question.
Yeah,
Mandalorian, is the dude always gonna wear the mask?
So as far as we know, at least for an extended period of time, there's a line in the first episode where they indicate that like the Mandalorians never take off their masks. So if and when he takes it off, it's going to be a big moment, which is kind of weird because like Pedro Pascal's a good looking dude. He was fun in Game of Thrones. Like, it's weird that he's acting behind a full face mask.
I guess there's precedent with like Vader, you know, being masked for however many movies, 3 movies or something.
Yeah.
And then these are revealed and it's, you know, it's kind of dramatic and, you know, whatever. But yeah, it does seem like it's just going to be like a handsome actor dude under there. So instead of like seeing somebody emote and like make facial expressions all this time, we'll just be staring at like a mask that seems to have very limited, very limited viewing area.
Yes, which they keep demonstrating as he keeps getting jumped when he's trying to look closely at things. Right. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I hope your stream cleans up. Episode 2, I actually liked even better than episode 1. So
awesome. I love the run times.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
Like, if you can give me a good show in like on average 40 minutes, it almost elevates to greatness versus a good show over the, like 55 minutes, which kind of takes a hit.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, if you can dial it back to like 10 or fewer episodes in that runtime, even better.
Yeah. I will say my wife was my co-pilot on this one and just fucking hated it.
Really?
Like just all the like blaster sounds and like, I don't know, just she doesn't like action stuff either. And even though it's not like gory violence, there is just like a lot of like loud ass.
Yes,
shooting and stuff happening, and she just has no quarter for that.
No, I totally understand that. It was loud. It was definitely annoyingly loud.
And we are not yet letting our kids watch pretty much any of the Star Wars because of like the PG-13 stuff.
Well, I admire your restraint and your ability to keep your kids in.
It's becoming a very bitter feud.
Well, on the other hand, both my children are so internet poisoned that it's like I really screwed something up a long time ago, but it's too late to make it right now, so here we are.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it's like, you know, like when you get to college and those kids that have like never like smoked weed before become like the biggest potheads you've ever seen. They're like Rastafari, like white Rastas in college. Yeah. Shanty towns.
Yes. I'm familiar with the with that phenomenon.
So maybe this would be along that line of thinking. Maybe this would be good for them.
Yeah, maybe if they, as long as they make it to college without having totally turned into the potato people from like whatever Wally or whatever it is with the people stuck on couches. Yeah.
Disney Plus is not helping with that.
No, it's definitely not. But it's enjoyable, and it's I'm enjoying seeing all these things that I will never ever watch, but being like, oh, I remember renting that from the video store. You know, it's fun. It's good times. All right.
Well, I'm amazed we went 45 minutes with this. I'm glad you watched The Mandalorian, though.
Me too.
If you hadn't watched, that would have been a much shorter podcast.
Yeah, it really salvaged giving us something positive to talk about instead of the friggin' Redskins.
All right, well, we'll come back after the Lions game, and I guess maybe I'll have watched. What is the Mandalorian like episode drop schedule? I know there's two out there, but I'm a little confused on like when they come out.
Fridays. It's Friday. Unclear what time Fridays, but I think they're generally live by like Friday morning.
All right, well, we might have to recap episode 3 next Monday along with the Redskins and Lions post game.
God help us. All right, Jamie.
All right, see you, bud.
Talk to you, man. Bye.